There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that.
This is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along for another hour of live local talk. And you're sure lucky to be here when one of my favorite guests, and just my favorite Mobilians, and a man who's a writer, historian extraordinaire of where we live, and one of the featured writers that's on my Locals Only Christmas list again this year. You can check out links to his books to purchase them there on our Facebook page and on our website. Ladies and gentlemen, my buddy John Sledge. Hey, John.
Hey, Sean. Thank you so much.
Hey, thank you. And this is I know we got a lot to talk about. I want to set the framework here that this morning I saw the story break that the Battle House Hotel had been named America's, by this group, America's number one historic hotel. And that was, it was pretty neat to see some national acclaim for something that has been part of my life, you know, the Battle House,
yeah.
Although it sure has changed here in the last couple of decades. So let's talk about the Battle House, that award,
mm-hmm.
and kind of the history of this, John.
Absolutely. Love to.
Okay, so Battle House, where they're on Royal Street. When was that officially a structure called the Battle House, and did it look like it does today?
No, it was officially a Battle House beginning in about 1852. It's actually the fourth, the one we have now is the fourth hotel on that site.
Have they all been called the Battle House?
No, the first hotel was called the Franklin because of Franklin Street. It burned in 1829. We don't really know what it looked like, probably basically a frame building, and then the Waverly Hotel replaced it, and it burned about 1850. And then the first Battle House, which was formed by three brothers, James, John, and Samuel Battles, and they formed a company and built the first Battle House in about 1853 when it was completed. And it was a five-story masonry building, and it had a nice two-story cast iron gallery that ran down Royal Street and then down St. Francis Street.
So this Battle House, first of all, so people, you know that was a surname, not anything about warring.
Right.
Okay.
Exactly.
Same battles as Battles War for different battles?
I'm not sure about, shame to say I'm not sure about that. It may well have been the same family because they had their fingers in a lot of pots.
Okay.
At that time.
So they start the Battle House, these three brothers, and at that point, do you have any records of how many beds or how many people it could sleep?
You know, I don't know. It was certainly a large hotel for the South at that time. Mobile's population then might have been about 30,000, which was respectable. New Orleans, compare at, 200,000, and New York at 1 million, Charleston probably at 20. So it was a good-sized southern city and a respectable hotel, and a lot of famous people stayed there. And when a lot of people talk about the historic Battle House, and certainly when they look at the cartouche on the corner of the existing building when it says Battle House 1852,
mm-hmm.
they're actually going back to that tradition. There are all kind of stories about, Stephen Douglas, the presidential candidate, was in Mobile during the election of 1860 that was so consequential. He stayed in the Battle House and waited for the election returns to come in with a guy named John Forsyth, who was the editor of the Press Register and quite politically active, had a national reputation at the time. And they were in the Battle House when the returns came in and showed that Abraham Lincoln had won the presidency. Forsyth and Douglas were incredibly depressed, of course, because this would ultimately lead to the South's secession. And then when Mobile and Alabama seceded from the Union, there were great public demonstrations in the streets of the Battle House, torchlit parades, drums, cadets, all that sort of thing. Jefferson Davis, president of the Confederacy, stayed in the hotel during the war. Lots of Confederate luminaries. And so it was quite an important building in the city's history.
Now, you talk about Jefferson Davis in the war, but I guess in that same, not structure, but that same, what, area right. or physical location that then General Andrew Jackson, right, in the yeah. War of 1812, didn't he have a command post there or spent the night or
he
something?
He did, yeah. It's a really, it's one of my favorite sites in Mobile, besides what's there now. I mean, if you actually go and stand at the corner of St. Francis and Royal Street and look toward the river, you can really see the downward slope, because that was the old colonial-era bluff, low bluff that ran along Royal Street, and that was kind of the edge of the habitable town. That was would have been all marsh and muck down to the riverbank from there, and then in subsequent decades, that was all infilled with cotton bales and barrels and junk. And the city pushed in toward the river. And in fact, when the archaeologists were doing a dig before they built the RSA Tower, right next to where the Battle House is, I remember going down there and they just found tons of old wooden roof shingles and wash patterns, where you could tell there had obviously been hurricane damage before on previous buildings, on the site. So yes, Andrew Jackson, when he came to Mobile, thinking the British were going to come here instead of New Orleans in 1814, he actually had a little headquarters. It was a little log building on that site. So very, very primitive then.
It's wild to just, you know, stand there and think about the people, even though the structures were different, that were standing there yeah. in the past. And also, I mean, you described that area down to the river. I know if people have had a chance to read your book, The Mobile River, you describe kind of getting to the riverfront is not what it's like now. I mean, it was,
no.
I mean, it was right piers and gangwalks to get from where that little dry ground was to the edge of the river.
Yeah, they would actually build the wharfs across that muck and mire. And of course, people used it as a garbage pit. They'd throw anything and everything down there.
Yeah.
So the town stank in the summer.
So when we come back from the break, I want to talk more about the history of the Battle House and, you know, how it compares to other historic cities and what their, you know, hotels, how old are the hotels. Also had some questions this morning about the architecture of the Battle House, too, and is that something that we see in other southern cities. We continue our conversation about this with my friend John Sledge. By the way, you can pick up his books a lot of places. I've got links to his books by going to our Facebook page or the website. Check out my Locals Only 2020 Christmas list. You'll see the John Sledge section, and you can click on the books right there. Plus, I'll talk about more about those with him when we return.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 1065. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
Right, rolling on here, Midday Mobile, and always great to get to talk to John Sledge, historian, writer, and friend, and talk about the history of the Battle House, among other things, but specifically talking about the Battle House Hotel, because it was awarded the nomination, actually won, for America's Favorite Historic Hotel. And it's, you know what I say, John? About time. It's about time they got
it's
around.
It's very nice. It's a nice lift for Mobile in what's been a very hard year.
That's for sure. The inside, and we can get, you know, we can talk about how pretty and nice the inside of the Battle House is through after the big remodel. But the outside, I want to get to that first. The outside of the Battle House, it bears similarities. I didn't think about it until we were talking this morning, and Dan and I were doing the morning show, and he said, you know, there's something about the Battle House reminds me of hotels elsewhere in the South. Was it a theme? Were they copying each other? Was it an homage? Do you know anything about that?
Well, they weren't literally copying each other, but they were building. Many of our historic hotels were built around that time at the turn of the century. The current Battle House was built after the first one burned in 1905. So the current one dates actually from about 1908. There was a New York architect. So this guy, his name was Frank Andrews, was a New Yorker, but he was also working all over the country. He did courthouses in, he did the Montana, the courthouse, state house rather, in Montana, and several other, one in Kentucky, and prominent commercial buildings around the land. So they do bear a lot of similar characteristics, what we'd call a Renaissance revival style. And that was a real popular type around the turn of the century. So you do see a lot of the same characteristics. They're all using essentially the same vocabulary, even if the buildings aren't exact copies.
You talk about standing the test of time, that look, though. You think about how many different architectural styles came after that, that we now go, oh, my gosh, no, that's bad. But the classic of that design still resonates.
What's interesting, too, about the Battle House is because of all the history of fires in hotels and Mobile, they actually used cast concrete and steel construction when they built the current one. And it was one of the earlier buildings in the country to use that technology. And the idea was this thing's going to be fireproof. And it certainly proved to be the case. Ironically, that made its restoration a bit challenging because modern hoteliers who were looking at it in the 70s and 80s and 90s were saying, you know, people want big hotel rooms now. And these are small. And since they're cast concrete, you can't really open them up.
That's why it took so long, because of the nature of it being
part of the reason. And I also like the way that the RSA did it, because they've combined both that old with the newer portion. And you see that with a lot of historic hotels around the world. It's an older building, but then there'll be a newer portion, and they manage to provide those amenities for people that really want them.
Kind of the history of our city here and the hotel side of it. It seems like a strange part, but I think it maybe is integral to all conversations when you read about this person came to stay here, this political person, this historical figure. When the rebuilt Battle House, when that started, was it by itself? Were there a series of hotels downtown? Was it the hotel? How did it look in our history? When did we start having multiple?
Yeah, no, we certainly, and we had multiple even before the Civil War, but they were smaller. In the case of the Battle House, we had several at that time. The Bienville Hotel, the Coffin Hotel, were both right on the square, the Coffin on the west side and the Bienville on the north. They were both about 1906, 1908, so they were contemporary with it. Prominent downtown urban hotels, really nice buildings as well, but unfortunately they didn't survive. So the Battle House is all we have to represent that period of, grand downtown hotels.
And that's because of the construction, or just somebody decided not to demolish it and put something else there?
Yeah, simple fate, really. I mean, the construction was certainly in its favor. I mean, it was practically indestructible unless it was torn down. And the others were, suffered because people wanted to put new things there. So they got – and there was a vigorous debate at various times post-1970 about whether the Battle House should be demolished. People said it was an eyesore, that it was hurting the city commercially, that it either needed to be restored or demolished, and we could have very easily lost it.
That's one takeaway, not even specifically you're talking about the Battle House, but other things that what seems like an eyesore in one decade, you look at another decade later or two decades later, and people all of a sudden go, holy cow, what an amazing thing. It's a weird thing. There's like this gap, it seems like, in history, that if it's not older than this, it seems like an eyesore. As soon as it's past that period of time, it's something to be preserved.
Very true, and a lot of credit certainly would go to Celia Wallace, Dr. Gerald Wallace, back in the 70s. They bought the hotel. And of course, he passed away, but she remained a pretty good steward of the hotel. For a number of years when it sat vacant and looked at various restoration opportunities. One of the coolest stories about the Battle House to me, and that very few people realize, there was actually a man that lived there alone through the 80s and the 1990s.
What?
And it was Celia Wallace's brother. And they had scoped, they had redeveloped a room in the hotel to cost it out and see what would it cost us to restore this thing, and let's do a room and, you know, plumbing, wiring, all of that. You know, habitable room, and that's where he lived. And you could come down Water Street, you know, late at night, and there'd be a light on the third or fourth floor up mm-hmm. there on the Water Street side. And I'd say, there he is, you know, he's in his room. And how eerie that must have been to be the sole denizen, all those ghosts.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's kind of a little bit of lore.
So he lived there for an extended period of time, and just like, I guess, when he would leave for work each day,
yeah,
go out the front door of the battle house?
Well, not the front door. I think they had a padlocked door on the St. Francis Street side, okay, as I remember. But yeah, I mean, really, really unusual circumstance. And one of those quirky Mobile tales that I really like.
When will... You talk about this is important and a good uplift for Mobile. You watch, you know, the history of our city. You promote the history of our city. Do you think, is there a, and maybe you don't even know this, is there a culture of people going to see, like, historic hotels? Because I know that we were heading into Rocky Mountains National Park. I was all about going up in the mountains, and the family saw, the women, the wife and the daughter saw that we were going by the Stanley Hotel, and holy cow, you think somebody would have put one of those parachutes out behind an NHRA vehicle and stop. We had to go into the Stanley. So are there other people that do that?
Yeah, their historic hotels really do a good job of promoting themselves. There's a lot of pride, as there should be. And a lot of people just like not just the idea of a historic hotel, but the level of luxury and elegance and tradition that you get there. It's not a chain. It's got a story. You know, the wonderful things about the Battle House aren't just that magnificent lobby, but the Whispering Arch and all kinds of little things that you can explore while you're there that just make that experience so much more enriching.
You mentioned something. You even started, we might have to continue on to another segment, because you mentioned there with all those ghosts in the Battle House, and now I'm getting inundated with questions about ghost stories from the Battle House. Are there specific stories, or are you just saying
I'm speaking sort of metaphorically. I am and I'm not. I guess that could be a show. My brushes with ghosts in a historic preservation career, but I very much believe in the presence of the past. And certainly in architecture, it's most manifest. And we know Woodrow Wilson, for instance, stayed in the Battle House. It was Mobile's front parlor. People remember it up to the 70s, you know, it's proms, it's balls, it's, you know, all mm-hmm. of that. So it wasn't just something that guests coming in from out of town experienced and locals didn't know anything about. Locals very much adopted it as their collective parlor. And that's one thing that makes the Battle House unique, as opposed to, say, some other hotels in Mobile. So literal ghosts, I don't know, but the potential would certainly be there because many, many people have stayed. I think there's been a murder there, at least one murder, back in the 20s, which is an interesting story. So the potential would be there.
There it is. John, before we wrap up here, too, first of all, Merry Christmas to you and the family.
Same to you, Sean.
Remind folks, too, I mean, they can go check out the links on my Locals Only Christmas list. But your latest book, Gulf of Mexico, A Maritime History.
Yes, available at Page and Palette and Fairhope. Also, Haunted Bookshop, downtown Mobile. Good spot.
Right.
And I so appreciate those stores and their support.
Yeah, and if they pick up that one, they'll end up buying the whole back library. That's for sure. And are you working on anything right now? Any secret you can tell us?
No. Yeah. Well, I'm working on a book about Mobile and Havana and their long experience. I mean, they share a lot of the same personalities, share a lot of history. Havana, of course, is 200 years older, but there are many, many links and ties. Cuban baseball really came out of Mobile. That's a neat story. Mm-hmm. So it's been a lot of fun to explore all that.
And I don't want to spoil that chapter of the book, but I mean, wasn't it the Jesuits at Spring Hill?
There were some students at Spring Hill, young Cubans who were here during the American Civil War. They couldn't serve, and they were kind of beached, and they learned this new game, and then took it back to Havana with them in the 1860s, founded the Havana Baseball Club, and some damn fine baseball players have come out of that. Out of that country.
Understatement for sure. John Sledge, as always, I appreciate it. We'll talk again in the new year.
Thank you, Sean, as ever. Merry Christmas. Stay safe.
There he is, the one and only John Sledge, and we're coming right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 135 FM Talk 106.5. It's Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here. I'm going to grab some calls and plenty of texts to look at here, too, at 343-0106. Cool. Started a conversation here about, Bill said, I had a buddy see a woman floating in the window on the balcony during a parade pre-renovation down at the Battle House. Bill, it's Mardi Gras, right? Could it be your buddy? Was it a ghost spotting, Bill, or did your buddy have one too many tall boys there before the parade roll? I thought I've seen some wild things during Mardi Gras, which, by the way, we're looking at it here. I mean, with the announcement from the Joe Kane Parade and Society, I don't see how the celebration is going to happen at all. You know, I was kind of weird thing for me. The holdout I thought was going to be Joe Kane. It really did. I thought just the nature of Joe Kane Day, it would be the last to cancel. But with that cancellation of Joe Kane, I don't know that we're going to be looking at anything going on for Mobile, for celebrations, for parades and for balls and all that. So, though it's happened before. All right. Also, people have questions here. Listen, if you want to get the easiest thing, instead of sending everybody a link, this is why I do this. Locals Only Christmas List. You can go to our Facebook page. You can go to our website and just look for my Locals Only Christmas 2020 list, which, by the way, big thank you to Greer's Market and Cash Saver for making this possible, and the folks at Yellowhammer Kayaks, Bayside Shoes for Life, Cammie's Old Dutch Ice Cream, Styx River Shooting Center, Mobile Shooting Center, Canabama, Old Mobile Trivia Book, and Mobile Bay Coins. Thank you, thank you, thank you. As Locals Only Christmas, these are as local a gifts as you can get. Produced here locally, sold here locally, and great under the Christmas tree. If you're in the kind of the last minute, if you're in the last minute mode here for a Christmas gift, don't be defeated. Step it up and get one of these very cool gifts. And these are just people that I think I like the stuff they do. There's no particular rhyme or reason. Just things that I know about or people have made me aware about that are local that I really enjoy and want people to look at when they go to buying Christmas gifts. So you can go on there and check that out. Just go to, once again, Facebook page, or you can go to the website. Speaking of the Facebook page, have you played our, it's Leanna's creation, our 2020 bingo game? This is, if you go check all the squares here in the 2020 bingo game, when you get bingo, let me know how you got it. Did you get it going down the left column, right column, across? Where'd you get it? It's 2020 bingo on our Facebook page. All right. Yeah. Bill says maybe he was a kid, so maybe too many moon pies that he saw that ghost. Yeah, so Jay says the oldest Mystic groups, OOMs and IM and Jay and KOR, haven't said anything yet. I understand that. Let me point out, though, that if Jay, my vibe is if anybody was going to buck the trend there, it would have been on Joe Kane. Yeah, I see. I understand what you're saying, but and they have not announced. And although, you know, people are eyeing that in those groups, but it just seems like Joe Kane would have been just the nature of Joe Kane. It would have been the last to do that. Yeah, Buddy says I thought the Comet Cowboys would be last. I thought yes, a lot of people. Jay said, can't wait for the Zoom Comet Cowboys. Everybody get on the Zoom call. We're going to look at the billboards for the Cowboys. And maybe it is. Maybe there'll be – I kind of thought there would be one parade, like as a kind of like a protest parade or something like that, and I thought it was going to be on Joe Kane. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it ends up being one of the Fat Tuesday parades that goes. But this is just personal. There's no science to this. It's just my vibe. I thought that Joe Kane would be the last to capitulate. I want to do the so I guess the way it was back in early December, remember, City of Mobile said that groups could cancel their parade permit 5 days before. At the same time, I don't see anything changing in our order, our state mandate here. And under the state mandate, you've heard that Mobile County Health Department and Alabama Department of Public Health are both saying that under the directive right now, that a parade wouldn't be a permitted activity because of not being able to have 6 feet of separation and all those things. So that's why I thought it would be like some entity. I mean, in the true spirit of Joe Kane, that it would just say, to heck with that, we're just doing this. That it would be, you know, if you have an organization that has like a P.O. box and people to go after, it might be people might be less ready to risk it than just an impromptu gathering of people on Joe Kane Day. And maybe that still happens. Speaking of COVID here, so you saw the picture probably, Governor Ivey getting her vaccination. Then the other question we talked to Todd Stacey about last hour, will Centers for Disease Control recommend that state legislatures get vaccinated and therefore open up two things, open up political cover and an actual supply of vaccines for members of the Alabama legislature that will be going back February 2nd. And one of the things to ask is, couldn't they do, even though it didn't work out for the court system, so District Attorney Ashley Rich had moved to, you know, how they space people for the jury trials, how they had the grand juries, how they used new spaces to be able to get everybody spaced out. Of course, that got shut down. But would something like that work for the legislature? Instead of meeting in the House and meeting in the Senate chambers, would they go to, you know, the RSA facilities there in Montgomery, somewhere that they could get more spread out? Because if you're a Democrat right now and you can say, hey, I'm worried about coronavirus, the Democrats are not going to, you know, obviously with a supermajority of Republicans in the House and Senate and a governor in the White House, in the Blunt Mansion, a Republican governor, you know you're not going to get your policies through. So if you can't do that, is it worth just dragging your feet to see how long you can make this go? That's kind of interesting here. Also saw a story, speaking of the COVID question, a lot of people have been asking why certain states are talking about rolling out the triage list here for vaccinations once you get through frontline healthcare workers and people in assisted care facilities. Then they started talking about giving certain minorities in the country, and I think mostly they're talking about Black Americans, priority in receiving the vaccine. That story is there. At the same time, like Reuters had an article today, and we've talked about this before, about some polling that was done, how polling of Black Americans showed that they were less likely to get the vaccine than other groups, other racial groups in the country. So Reuters reporting today, when a major healthcare organization asked A.R. Bernard, the Black head of the Brooklyn megachurch, to sit on a committee tasked with boosting acceptance of COVID-19 vaccines in communities of color in New York City, he demurred. Bernard, who leads the Christian Cultural Center, the largest church in New York City, pretty big, said he turned down the offer because he's worried some members of his congregation could view his participation as, quote, joining forces with the system, end quote, and to use African Americans as guinea pigs for vaccines that have been developed in record time. Now, I will say this, that historically, there's something to talk about, but in today's time, it sure looks like a lot of white people getting the vaccine, the celebrities we're supposed to watch get the vaccine, right? Goes on to say here in the story, like most of the dozen Black faith leaders Reuters interviewed, Bernard did not want to show public support for an inoculation he feels that he does not know enough about and risk jeopardizing his community's trust. Bernard said, we're concerned about it being tested on persons of color, referring to the people who would get the vaccine early in the public rollout. Black people comprised about 10% of the vaccine trial volunteers compared to 13.4% of the U.S. population. So as a percentage, less than their percentage of the population. Pastor was hospitalized with the virus back in March, said he wanted to wait and see for more information on the vaccine's side effects. Hesitation to recommend the vaccination is striking because black pastors have been a key role in educating their communities about the risk of COVID-19 for African Americans, who are 2.8 times more likely to die from it than white Americans, according to the Centers for Disease Control. Public health officials hope black faith leaders and other black role models. I would be. Let's flip that around. Flip it around. Let me ask this. This is where my frustration comes with identity politics in this country. We're gonna change the word black to white. Public health officials hope white faith leaders and other white role models will help alleviate strong skepticism among the white community for the safety of the vaccine. Because if you go look at the anti-vax movement out there, y'all, sure looks like a lot of white faces to me, right? So what if you wrote? I can't put myself in the shoes of someone who's black, but I could. What does that sound like? Because Reuters writes, public health officials hope black faith leaders and other black role models will help alleviate strong skepticism among African Americans about the safety of the vaccine. What if you change that to white? To me, that seems, as a white guy looking at it, it seems bigoted in its angle. Just, it strikes me as that. I don't know. So it was a. Well, look, I mean, there's going to be, we're just at the beginning of this. There's going to be, in the months to come, all these arguments about who gets the vaccine, why they got the vaccine, who's first, who's second, who's taking it, who's not taking it. This state, they can't get enough. This state, they have it sitting on the shelves. And like my theory that people pick their vaccine and like treat it like a sports team. Like, oh, I'm all Pfizer, to heck with that Moderna. Or Moderna all the way, no Pfizer. I don't know, it's just... Oh, that paragraph maybe raised both eyebrows, and that's hard to do. All right, coming right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 150 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. What do I have? A couple odds and ends. They're not their odds and ends stories. They're just ones we're getting to here now towards the end of the program. But number one, out of all the things that did make it through in the COVID CARES Act 2 COVID relief package, you know what they didn't get? You know what they didn't get? And we still don't have here in Alabama, liability protection for businesses over COVID. So this might not happen until February. Other states have moved forward with that because they had their legislatures in session. In Alabama, we didn't. It's big. I don't think, and by the way, the bill they had put together that they could have passed if they wouldn't have shut things down so quickly had support from trial lawyers and businesses. Talk about getting those two together on something reasonable out there. And I mean, the kind of the Wikipedia version of this is, if you were just conducting business normally, taking precautions as per normal, you would be protected from liability for some lawsuit over COVID. And do I think any of those will stick? No. But what small business, what medium-sized business, what big business has the time to not be doing their business and the money to pay attorneys to fight something that they'll eventually win? So that's out of they pat themselves on the back, arms coming out of socket in Washington for signing off on this COVID relief bill after all this time, right before they go home for Christmas. They did not get liability protection in there for businesses. Fail. Fail, 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 fail. Oh, and I, speaking of business, I warned you about this in the past, and I was the lone voice in this. I said, we should be looking at some antitrust legislation when... Which way did it go? I think Bass Pro Shops bought Cabela's. I think it worked that way. Or was it Cabela's buying? I'll have to Google it. But right now, I think, maybe I'm wrong, that Bass Pro Shops bought Cabela's. And if you're new to this, those are two big outdoors retailers. Fishing, hunting, camping, hiking. Cool stuff, right? And I warned back then that this is the problem of having this consolidation in business. And at that point, I think it had reached a horizontal integration portion that we should have looked at it, right? And now you hear the news story just then. Now that company is going after Sportsman's Warehouse. Let's move in with the antitrust fighters, just like Carnegie's, you know, we're moving in like the Rockefellers. We got to move in on this. If you let one person control essentially 90%, one company control 90% of sale of 7mm-08 Remington core lock and 140 grain or some spider wire braid fishing line or hooks or binoculars or camo. This is wrong. This is wrong. Be the one sole voice out there fighting the monopoly conglomerates in the outdoors world. Yeah, I'm telling you right now. So it's Cabela's Bass Pro Shop, one company. They did that, 2 years ago, 3 years ago? And now they're going after Sportsman's Warehouse. One day y'all will be saying, I remember the days when I had choices and variety, and I continue to push for you to shop at your local outdoors retailers, like my friends at McCoy's. Make sure you keep that local business going. Because especially now, more than ever, as they're going to have, this is the Bell telephone. This is going to be the Bell telephone of hook and bullet. This needs to be broken up. Federal government, where are you allowing this to happen? The FEC, where are you? I would deny their right to buy Sportsman's Warehouse. The monstrosity, the Death Star of Cabela's Bass Pro Shops, then get Sportsman's Warehouse. What? On a national scene, what's left? Don't tell me Overton's, Rogers, small players. What's left? Academy, right? Well, they'll be next. Side note, nobody else paid attention to that, but we are here. Oh, and a last note here, too, and then I'm going to read a text or two before we wrap up. So I went and looked at, and I'm going to do it again tonight, looked at the Christmas Star last night, put some pictures up on the Twitter feed, took with the binoculars and a thing called a phone scope. It's kind of a cool deal where you can put your phone on a pair of binoculars or a spotting scope. And so I took some pictures and put them up. Looking at it, really loved it, enjoyed that time outside in the dark looking at Jupiter and Saturn. But are you surprised there wasn't some like cult associated with this? I mean, this was way bigger than the Hale-Bopp comet. And the Hale-Bopp comet had its own cult of people that dressed up the same way and waited for the mothership to come get them. There wasn't a conspiracy around this. Or was there? It's kind of interesting, because usually if there's anything big and it's astronomical, it's usually has some kind of cult associated around it. All right. A lot of people asking, about the Joe Kane thing. The cancellation of Joe Kane was a parading society and not the foot marchers. So would the foot marchers, they're, you know, the people on foot, many different groups comprise the foot marchers on Joe Kane Day, would they be the people to resist the shutdown of Mardi Gras celebrations? Would they resist? Dan says, hey, let's go after the cable companies first, redneck. Okay, listen, can we get a package deal, Dan? We'll go after the cable companies, and then I'll be going to break up. What do we call that? Big Outdoor? Big Outdoor. We'll go after Big Outdoor. We'll do cable company and Big Outdoor. Because I believe this is, as my friend says here on the text line, this aggression will not stand, man. It's a great movie. You cannot let this happen. I'm here telling you, in December 2020, you let Cabela Bass Pro Shop thing buy up Sportsman's Warehouse. And it's the beginning of the end of times. Paul Feinbaum, show on the way next. Talk to y'all in the morning.